giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. We are coming at you from RailsConf 2013. My name is Ben Ornstein. I'm here today with an inimitable Sandy Metz. Hey, Sandy.
Hi, Ben.
How's it going?
Tired. RailsConf immersion experience.
RailsConf takes a lot out of you.
Yeah, totally.
It's a lot of confing.
I got my first good night's sleep on Pacific time last night, so now everyone's in trouble.
Awesome. So you are a newly minted Ruby hero.
How cool is that?
How do you feel about it?
I can't even talk about it.
Are you tremendously embarrassed?
It's not embarrassment as much as there's some amount of terror involved.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have something you need to live up to now?
I feel like I have to – like I want to be proud of something, and it's very hard to figure out what that thing is and to let myself be proud of it, right? And
so yeah.
I don't know. I was thinking – you know, they gave us – I had a little permanent – you know.
They
told me
up.
To be there. And so that made – you could – one could guess.
Sure.
And so I have decided that like the book was so much work, and I'm proud of the work.
Yeah.
I'm proud of the effort, right? And I hope it's useful. Like all those ideas are other people's ideas. Like, how can I be proud of that?
Well, it takes work to distill it.
But I wrote it down. I did that, so I'll totally accept that.
So, is that the thrust of the reason behind the award? Is the book?
I have no idea. I mean, the quotes that they put up, like other people nominated me, and people clearly voted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't have much public presence on the internet, really.
Are you sure about that?
Well, I mean, now you can Google my name and find stuff, but who does that? That's creepy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did it when I was about an hour ago.
Yourself?
No, you.
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
Where do you think these questions come from?
Well, now I have talks now.
Right.
Right? And so the talks are there. And that's like, if there's some like body of work, there's that.
Yeah.
That you can find.
Which counts.
Yeah, it does count. And talks are so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
Telling
the story.
Absolutely. So what was the process of writing the book like for you?
Incredibly painful. So they tried to get me to write a book for a while. Like I got overheard in a hallway rant by an editor at Addison Wesley. Let this be a warning to you.
Careful about the hallway track.
Careful about the hallway rant. Yeah. And so I don't write books. Who writes books? Do you write books? You did? Yeah.
Mm.
Like I've written email and documentation since I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
One story about whitewater kayaking. It doesn't count. And so I didn't really think – I didn't have a book. What book would it be? How would I write a book?
Mm.
And so it took a long time for me to say, maybe I'll write something down, right? The, like drawing on whiteboards and explaining things.
Yep.
And so then I was really bad at writing, right? How do you write a book? How do you organize it? Like what do you say first? What do you say second? And so there was a lot of I got better at the writing as time went on, but here was the process. Let me tell you about the process.
Tell me.
Yeah. This was such a painful story. Okay, so I sit down and write the examples for a chapter.
The code.
With the code. I write the code first.
Yep.
Right? Like this is the code that illustrates the point. And then I go through and pseudo code the text.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So just stream of consciousness, like this is what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, I realize there are huge gaps in it. Huge, huge gaps. Like big leaps in the code examples and big leaps from like a lot of unsaid things that ought to be said. And so I go fill all those in. And then I realize that there's still big leaps and I don't know how to bridge them. I don't know how to explain what happened between step C and step like M, which is what it is. And at that point, I walk around the house cussing for 2 weeks. Seriously, banging my head on the wall, saying things like, I'm never going to finish. I'm never going to finish. I'm stupid. I'm an idiot. I'm never going to get this. I'm never going to finish. I know that the editors at Addison Wesley won't allow that big gap, but I can't bear to take it out. And so then I dream about it every night, and I wake up every morning thinking about it. And then one day I have this like, oh, I understand. I like get it. And then I can write the transition, and it's like the most important thing.
Wow.
Was the most important thing. And so that happened with chapter 2, the first chapter I wrote, and then chapter 3 and chapter 4. And so I was in terror early on that every time it happened, it meant that I was never going to be able to finish.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a while, I realized, okay, this is how it works. 2 weeks of walking around, headbanging, cussing. That's like at this point. And I could never decrease that time interval, which is why it took so long to write the book, right?
Interesting.
And so
that was a painful process for you.
It was so painful. It was like without like the spouse at home, right? Like if you don't have people who are supporting you in this process, it's easy to see why people find it hard to write books.
Sure.
Because it's hard. Anyway, but I embraced that process after a while. And the secret truth is I grew to love the writing. Grew to just absolutely love it.
Awesome. Because it helped sort of clarify some of your thoughts.
No, because I wanted to – like if I have a strength, it's seeing the connections between unrelated things. And if I have a weakness, it's that all the filtering in my brain is not as good as everyone else's. And that's a coin, right? That's both sides of a coin.
Mm.
And so giving myself permission to let the images leak through my bad filter and to write that down in the book to explain things was like really cool. Like I was afraid of explaining things the way I naturally wanted to explain things.
Mm.
And then after a while, I just decided, what are they going to do? Tell me not to write the book? Like, I'll just write it down.
So you started to embrace your voice.
Yeah. That's a perfect way to put it, right? Like I found a voice and then I was afraid of that voice for a while. And then I just said like, what the heck? And so the response that I get to the book, I think is, much of the positive response to the book is the response to that voice, that sort of non-academic storytelling, leaky-brained, strength-weakness voice.
Mm.
So anyway, writing. Here's the thing I would tell you. Like we know because I wrote a book that anyone can and that it makes me think that everyone should.
Mm. So you're glad you did it then?
I am glad. I mean, I'm glad it's over, but the secret truth is I miss the writing.
Huh.
And I never thought I'd say
that. As arduous as it was.
I did a lot of like never again, gun to head, never again stuff when I was doing it. But yeah, well, I mean, it helps to be done and to have got – like my writing got better over the period of the book.
I heard a couple people say that.
You practice every day. Like your code gets better.
Yeah.
Like there's no reason. Your tests get better. There's no reason to think that your writing – it didn't get faster, but it got better.
Mm.
And so now like I kind of want to do more of that.
Hmm.
It was cool.
Hmm.
I think there are more books in my future. Let me say that. And there would have been a time when I was like now, like I'm it's an embracing of a different, like, who am I now? I wrote code every day for 30 years. That's what I did.
Hmm.
I didn't blog. I didn't go out in the community. I didn't do talks. I sat at my desk and I wrote code. And now, like, I'm something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that thing is, but.
Ruby hero.
Yeah, right. Stop that. And so, yeah, it's like. It's like so much fun to explain things and have people get it. It's so much fun to demystify this stuff.
Mm.
And that is totally cool. Like, why not?
Yeah. And it seems to have turned out well. So I was looking at you have 5 stars on Amazon, which I think you can call a success.
Isn't that cool?
That's pretty great.
Yeah, okay, I can't talk about that, though. That's like reading your press, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I do. Okay, I will admit, I do sometimes look at the reviews.
Well, yeah, why not?
But, I mean, here's the thing. This is the thing I was talking to people in the hallway about. It's like... It's odd to go from being someone no one knows about, right, to having a book because there's a kind of visibility I have all of a sudden that I never had.
Right. That's something I wanted to ask you about. There seems to be this phenomenon of writing a book confers a lot of authority on you.
It absolutely does. And so let me ask you this. Am I a different person than I was when no one knew my name?
Hmm.
No, not at all. It feels really important not to – read one's own press.
Hmm. So you don't want to start feeling like that different person. You just want to.
Here's what I think. It's like if I read that stuff that says, "Oh, you're brilliant," and I believe it. Then if I read stuff that says, "Oh, you're an idiot," that's equally weighty.
Hmm.
And like, I don't want my self definition to be externally defined. And so I'm trying really hard to just like I did not think the book would sell. Who would? These books don't sell. Like, these books sink without a trace. I mean, that's what happens to technical books, right? Like, you get cred because your name's on it. Mm-hmm. And certainly the effort deserves praise because it's hard. And I expected that to happen.
So you've been happy with how it's selling then?
It's selling beyond my wildest dreams. Now, again, your wildest dreams in the vertical, this thin, narrow vertical technical market that we're in that's a small dream.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like it's the process of writing, the process of getting it done. Like I've been reading, I'm giving a talk next week in Paris at Le Conf. And I've been reading the research about grit. Do you know the grit phenomenon? It's a measure of persistence. Mm. And it turns out that people you can predict success based on it's a better – grit is a better predictor of success than intelligence, than IQ. Mm-hmm. And like I'm a blue-collar girl from a blue-collar background, right? Like I value work over reward. And so the book was work. It was like going – this is the way I ended up having to think about it to get it finished because it took 2 years. I worked on it like in the dark at my desk every morning from 5 to 8 for 2 years.
Wow.
And because it took a long time. Like I want – like code can be good enough. Like the best code is just good enough, right? If your code is perfect, it's a waste of money. Hmm. But the book felt like it had to be perfect. I don't know, I'm not saying it is. But I didn't feel like I could stop until I had done the absolute best I could.
Hmm. That's an interesting difference, right? Because the code, once it works, that's at least good enough in some sense.
You should
right?
walk away.
That it's functional.
Like, yeah, there's a point where it's cost you money to do better, mm-hmm. right? And with a book, it's like written down in paragraph. It's like chiseling code in stone, right? It's a thing because your code, you can fix it later, but the book is a kind of permanent artifact, right?
So do you flip through it now?
Sometimes – okay. Oh, don't even ask. That's just embarrassing, Ben. Yes, of course I do. And yeah. now that I've forgotten it a little – you know that thing where you go back and look at code that you kind of forgot you wrote?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you're like a little embarrassed, but sometimes you're like, wow, look at that code. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I open the book and I'll read a paragraph and I'll say, wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Who wrote that?
Yeah. I've had the same experience with like old blog posts and things like that.
It's that
like
same
sometimes like, oh, that's kind of clever. And sometimes it's like, oh, God.
Yeah, exactly.
The cringe.
And so I look at like the chapters I wrote first, chapter two, and I read that some of that and I'm like, oh, that could be so much better. I could have put that so much better.
Mm.
And then but later – and I wrote the intro last and it let me it was really hard, right? I spent like a whole day writing the first paragraph of the book, the part about wanting to do good work. Because it felt like it needed a big picture thing, right, to start. I mean, it seems like books do that, right?
Yep.
Aren't we supposed to do that? And trying to find some way to say why we care in a way that like I'm proud of us as technologists, and I'm proud of the work that we do. And it feels like there's a lot of, you know, having been the whole long arc of my life, right? Like people used to curse and spit when they said IT, right?
Mm.
And the time has passed and now Agile came in, which let us like do better work for our customers. And now we have these technologies where we can iterate quickly. And so all of a sudden, like our best efforts can go right into customer value.
Mm.
And I feel proud of that. Like, I'm glad of that for us.
Do you know Gary Bernhardt?
I do. I don't know Gary personally, but
you know his...
I definitely know of Gary.
You and he are sort of opposite ends of the spectrum, I feel like, on that part.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he says he's deeply embarrassed of the work we've done.
He didn't do the work. He clearly did better work than I did 30 years ago. Because, okay, it's not perfect, but there was a time... Okay, there are projects now where there is source code still in existence where we spent a year locked in a hotel room writing specs before we wrote code. Like I'm of that era, mm-hmm. right? And then when that spec comes out and you have to write the code, then right away it's clear it doesn't do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't change anything. Like customers want changes, but we'll be late and they'll blame us, right? I mean that the influence of Agile on how whether or not we produce software that at least kind of does what they want has been huge.
Mm. So you're a waterfall survivor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm old enough so that I spent more time doing waterfall than I've spent doing Agile. Probably like Agile still seems a little new to me.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that scary? Alarming thought.
Yeah. Well, at least you know about the bad old days, so you have some contrast.
You know, I wrote code that was absolutely unmaintainable, and I had no idea, with the best of intentions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just throw it over the wall and run away.
So if you were in like the standard content marketing genre, you would now write a book about writing books?
Okay, you know what I really want to do? I want to tell stories for a living.
Yeah?
I want to help people give good talks.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be fun? You're in that business.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, don't you want to just help someone? Every talk you see?
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, yes.
Yeah.
I get the care mad during talks. Like, I want to, like, just stand up and be like, just let's stop and let's
let me
fix
help
this.
With your slides. Let me help, right? Like, tell me a story. Where's the story? Yeah.
It's, yeah. I'm trying to channel it in a more positive direction, like with my talk tomorrow and things like that. Sometimes I get a little angry. Like, why aren't you more excited? Why aren't you trying to get me interested in this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, reach out and grab me by the throat. I mean, your talks do that. Like, you want to reach out and grab me. And I love your talk. Like, I live in terror of speaking right after you. This is a bad thing. I look on the schedule and say, oh, where's Ben?
I remember you came up to me after at something, and you're like, you're a jerk. Yeah. You're going right before me.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, Rocky Mountain last year was perfect because you were after me.
Yeah. And those talks worked really well together.
That was perfect.
That was a nice one, too.
It was
too.
Like a match made in heaven.
I was sitting in the audience and be like, wow, this is exactly mm-hmm. the thing I would put right before mm-hmm. my talk.
And after you got up, I was like, wow, I'm glad he went second.
It's different styles.
Yeah,
I don't have a
true.
Book.
Well, why not?
I don't know.
You know, it's
people take me too seriously.
Character building.
I can't get up at 5 in the morning.
Well, so many people write at night. I don't,
yeah.
I usually have a beer when I get home, and I don't do a lot of work after that.
That's fair.
I'm better off. I do my best work at the crack of dawn. And there you go.
Do you have a day job?
I had a day job until the book was published, and then I got so busy I couldn't really do my day job.
Gotcha.
And so now I'm figuring out what I'm doing for a day job.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What sounds good?
I love teaching. I mean, I'm making this video series for the book for Addison Wesley.
Oh, cool.
So that's happening. So
that
means
a bunch of screencasts?
Yeah. And so now, you know, here's where I am on that. Okay, I've watched every one of the tutorials, and I've looked at a bunch of other people's screencasts. And, you know, screencasts without naming names, they're like talks. And can you hear me hedging here?
Mm-hmm. Let it out.
I just want to be dynamic and interesting, and sometimes I don't find those screencasts dynamic and interesting. And so now there's a whole technology thing that I don't know how to do, and I'm trying to figure out. Like, I bought a bamboo tablet, because really what I want to do is stand at the whiteboard and draw.
Mm.
All right? I want a bunch of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to figure out, like, what would that look like in bamboo tablet, pictures, code, Pry, T-Mux.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm experimenting with, it's got to fit in 1280 by 720, apparently. How can you tell the best story you can mm-hmm. in that space?
Has Jeff Kazmir been hounding you to come teach for his company?
He did a little hounding. Yep. That's true. But it's totally flattering.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, I'm not ready to be aligned, but I love being able to be loosely associated with all these people who are doing good work.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's cool. So I keep hounding Jeff. Like apparently he has a bike that had a bunch of parts rusted to it.
Mm.
And so he told me a long story the other day about rebuilding his bike and what the bike shop the price the bike shop quoted him and what he did. And I told him for that price, he could get me to come to Denver and work on his bikes.
Mm.
And then I could be part of the school.
So maybe a little teaching, a little freelance bike repair.
Bike maintenance.
Bike fitting.
Yeah, exactly. There's a bunch of women in that school. I bet all their bikes fit bad.
Yeah.
We could totally fix that.
I touched on a nerve when we were talking about this the other night.
You're passionate
about bike fit.
Yeah, there's like a – you can press that button and the rant starts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your talk yesterday?
It's so hard to – okay, it's hard to admit. That's really the problem. I loved my talk yesterday, right? Like I wasn't – I wanted it to be perfect and it wasn't perfect. And there was stuff I messed up, and there was pacing things I should do. Like I solicited a lot of feedback. And, you know, you have to – you're aware of this too, right? You can't just say, how was it?
Oh, yeah.
Because people say it was fine. So you have to bribe them. Like, you have to say, I'll buy you a beer for everything you can tell me that I can change in that talk, right? Mm. So it takes a lot of browbeating to get people to say a thing, you know, a thing that would help improve it.
True. Yeah, but the people that want to say good things will come up and say nice things to you, and the people that didn't think it was that good just kind of walk
out.
That's
right. They're self-selecting, right? So you never hear it.
Yeah.
And so – but I did manage to browbeat people about the Head and Shoulders enough
mm-hmm.
so that I got people saying, well, I was lost here, or that was too long, or that was too short. So I can't – that talk can be improved.
Mm.
But I did love it. Like, here's the thing about that talk. Like, I thought I understood all those issues. And then again, I know it's trite. I tried to explain them. And then the talk – in the last 3 weeks, it's gotten better and better and better. Right? I kept taking words out and being more precise. And so
– that's great.
It is. And talks are some – like, that's right from the book. But the nice thing about talking is that you can show pictures that change in little increments, which you can't in a book, right? You can't show the same picture and make it be like slightly different over and over and over again.
Mm.
And that helps so much to explain.
What if you did a flip book?
It was exactly. It's a flip book. The coding flip book. Now, it would be like a foot deep.
A what?
It would be like a foot,
Deep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of moving pictures.
This could be a new genre.
I think that we really suffer from a media to let us explain these things. Like, if there are complaints about Pooter, it's about the code examples are too short. Because people need a real app to look at this stuff. And you can't put a real app in a book. Right? There's no media format that we have easy access to.
I think code examples are the hardest part of teaching concepts in programming.
They're brutal.
Like for my it's really hard to get something with enough meat that it looks reasonable and realistic, and yet it's simple enough that you can grasp it. And no matter where you come down on that, people will complain about both sides actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're a big pile of people that have attention, detail oriented. Highly attentive, slightly ADD people.
Yeah.
And so anything about the example that sticks in their brain, then they're gone, right? And they're right.
That's true, yeah.
Like we want you to the example by definition has to be some kind of abstraction that maybe doesn't meet every general case.
Mm. Yeah. Something is wrong on the projector screen and
right,
now I cannot focus.
Yes. And I'm gone. And then what are you 5 minutes later? And so really, to me, the challenge in talks is getting all those people to tell me where I lost them so I can fix that thing.
This is one of the reasons I really try to encourage a lot of feedback in my talks, because you'll get those people that will get sidetracked and then kind of tune out. Whereas if you kind of give them the floor for a minute and be let them get their point of, you're right, this isn't a totally realistic thing.
But here's the deal. How on earth do you do live coding? That's terrifying. And then you let people ask you questions I would just die.
Why?
Because...
It's not that bad. People think it's harder than it is.
It is that. Let me just say this. I am never doing it.
You practice your talks a lot, right?
A lot.
I just do the same thing, except it's with code. Like, I know every step I'm going to take that I'm going to show.
So maybe it's not so bad.
And the rest is just talking about stuff. I try to just be as honest and straightforward as possible. People are like, well, I think this would be better this way. I'm like, oh, okay, let's think about that. And I try to not pretend that I've considered every angle or that I have the answer to everything. And it kind of works out okay.
So I'm willing to believe that that's true for you. the thing you just said about the first, I don't know when this was, before I ever first gave a talk and I was feeling really terrified, I heard somebody famous, I don't even remember who it was, answer a question from the stage. Someone raised their hand, the terror thing, right? Someone raises their hand and asked the speaker a question he couldn't answer. And instead of making something up, he said, wow, I don't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. Right out there in front of God and everybody. And I never realized that was an option.
That's the best option.
You can just not know. And yeah. It was so liberating to me. It's I don't have to be perfect.
Yes.
I don't have to know everything.
Absolutely.
And so that, I say good on you, right?
Oh,
it took me a long time. I did not make that up. I had to see it in action to really understand that. I could just say, well, I don't know anything about that.
I think there are a couple of fallacies that people think are true when they first start speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And the first is you have to fill every moment of silence with sound, which is how you get people talking really fast, or you get people that don't pause for questions or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that you must be an expert on every aspect of what you're about to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the reality is neither of those is really true.
We know that, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
From personal experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I realized, I had the first talk I gave was actually at RailsConf. It was on Vim. And I had this, I was having this sort of panic as it got closer and closer. I was like, doesn't everyone know this? Isn't all this stuff super obvious?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really easy mindset to get into, because you kind of lose sight of what you've learned already. And then I think, I have to know everything, and I have to teach them things they've never seen before, and that's not really true.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have a grab bag, and some people learn something from over here, and some people learn something over here, and it's okay that they know things that you don't know. And it's just if you're a little further down the path than a handful of people, it's worth putting
Absolutely.
A talk together.
It's someone told me something. Now, I had four thoughts, and I didn't write any of them down, so I'm going to lose them all here. Someone told me something years ago that was really useful. And they said, if you write a blog post, which I never do, but theoretically, imagine I
looked at your blog. It's a little
out of date.
Yeah, it's okay. Mine too.
A third of the people who read it are going to say, oh, yeah, old news. And a third of the people are going to say, what? That was insanely complicated. I could never understand that. And then a third of the people are going to say, that was a miracle, because they're ready. And so one thing I try to do is imagine myself, my past self, like eager, interested, ignorant, and explain the thing I know now to them because someone's there. Hmm. Right? Someone is where you used to be. Like you don't have to know everything to tell them something. And so there's that, right? Like imagining the audience. And the other thing is something Deborah told my editor at Addison Wesley told me when I was like that thing. Okay, so everything you know, well, it is so obvious. Surely everyone else knows that. Mm-hmm. Like they're a font of things you don't know because you can't see inside their heads. But surely your head is transparent to them, right?
Right.
They know everything you have. And she told me something. She said, people love the story they know. And that was a revelation to me. It's like kids watching a Disney movie. People love the story they know. And it was really surprising to me that people who know everything I say will come up to me and say, boy, that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't even have to be telling them things they don't know, which
True.
Is that's a revelation, right? Just tell them their story. Like a story well told is engaging to people.
That's true. Yeah. And maybe you just put it a slightly different way than they thought about it in the past. And
yeah.
so they came up with just like one more new metaphor that made sense for them.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, I've had people who I've like repeated a talk. And like, oh, I saw that talk when you gave it here, but like, yeah, I sat through it again. It was good. It was nice to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, even if it is literally all the same information, it's like just even mm-hmm. a repetition is okay.
Yeah.
People are right with it.
And it's like, okay, like we should accept that, right? That's true. Yeah. So
that's why I'm not running any more talks.
Yeah. Talks take me so long.
It's like, too much work.
Like two talks a year is like all I can do. I'm hoping to get a new talk for the fall. But now, fortunately, I had to cut some content out of this talk. And Katrina Owen has like the follow-up talk to it. So we've been doing a lot of talk, right? So the talks aren't really a collaboration as much as both of our explorations about a certain idea.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's clear there's like a third talk that needs to go in this series. And it would be easier to do that than the talk I have in mind for the fall.
So I don't want to ask you to try to summarize your whole talk in the podcast, but like what was the title so people want to go look it up? Because I think there's videos of this, right?
Yeah. The Magic Tricks of Testing.
Mm-hmm.
Magic Tricks. Oh. And, you know, I bought a hat and then I felt – I just
– so you told me this. You wimped out.
I couldn't bring it. I wimped out. I couldn't really put it – I don't think I'm good with
props.
Was it
like props. A silk top hat?
It was like
thing?
A top a hat thing.
Hat.
Yeah. It was a little big. It needed modification because it was like –
Yeah,
but,
that's all right.
But it wasn't that it was big; it's that I was a gutless wonder and couldn't bear to bring the top hat onto stage. But maybe if I talk about it enough, I'll someday bring
those
it.
Gags. Only go so far, though. You know, it's good for like
it would be cool.
3 or 4 seconds of laughter.
Oh, then... you know what? Now that I have you, and we're speaking of gags,
yes,
who was it at Ancient City Ruby who trolled with a green laser?
I don't know. I don't know.
It could have been you.
No, it wasn't me.
It could have been.
I wouldn't do that to somebody else, to the speaker, fellow speaker.
I thought it was really funny, and then I thought my reaction to it was I enjoyed it so much. That
you handled
then
it well.
Well,
so
I figured I was going to encourage that behavior, and there was going to be like six yesterday.
Oh, yeah. No, the backstory is just that you were giving a talk, and you had a green laser pointer, and you
and
were
I
like
was,
highlighting something.
Well, and,
then,
and I was gloating about having a laser.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you're
it
like,
was
ooh,
all my fault.
I have a laser pointer.
Yeah, exactly.
And then suddenly there was another one on the screen sort of dancing around.
And then no one would admit. Like, it had to be another speaker. And
Likely.
So we were checking around in the audience. Like, I asked all the people behind the speakers that I knew, and whoever it was, like, their cover is tightly held. Like, no one will admit it.
Yeah. I wish I could do a big reveal and tell you it was me. But...
Well, you were in the front, so I looked at you first. That's all I'm saying. But
well,
you were quick
for that
if it was you
vote
to
of
hide
confidence.
The laser.
Yeah. No. I respect other speakers' talks too much.
No, that was so. I didn't feel disrespectful to me. Like I was
That's,
a little
yeah,
bit poking
funny.
On the audience, right? So I
yeah.
just I, it felt to me in that moment as if I probably deserved it. I asked them if they were cats, as I recall, and I was like playing it around the ceiling.
Yeah.
So what do you get when you do that? Someone whips their competing laser out.
Right. How embarrassing.
Yeah.
So what's next then? Looks sounds like a new talk's on the horizon. Maybe another book because you kind of miss it.
Yeah, I'm making videos right now.
Making
I'm trying
videos.
To figure out like some way to actually generate revenue, and so I'm doing like when people hunt me down, I go to their businesses and spend a couple of days with them. But I've been really kind of bad about in any way attempting to solicit that work.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I've been doing at RailsConf is doing that. What should Sandy do? I've been asking everyone, what should Sandy do? What business am I in? And so
you got a brand now.
I got a brand.
You got to leverage your brand.
How? And you know,
and write an ebook about leveraging your brand.
Well, here you go. You should send me a link. But here's the other thing we know, right? Fame has to be ephemeral, right? Next year, like I want to find some way to figure out what it is while people know my name.
Mm.
And I don't really expect that to be permanent, though maybe it will be. It would be cool if it was.
Mm-hmm.
But what is, you know, I don't know.
You can't be a one-hit Ruby hero. You know, just keep on going.
I love telling stories. And I never thought that my life would turn into a place where there might be a way for me to do that.
Right,
in addition to writing code.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how cool is that? And so that's next for me, trying to figure out how to do that.
Very cool. So if you want to hire Sandy or tell her what she should be doing with her life.
Or tell me what I should do. And in order to find me, you have to go to my stale blog and follow the link to my hobby website, BikeCalc. And on that, there's Talk to Me links. And if you click on one of those, I'll eventually realize that you're not asking me to calculate your tire size for your bike computer.
Can't we just message you on Twitter?
Send me a tweet. That would
work better, right?
Totally.
I was looking at your tweet stream. Your tweet stream today. That's a thing. And it's just like thanks. Thank you.
I'm really
I'm
bad.
So humble. Thank you. Just
don't
praise
look at my
for Sandy
tweet
Matt.
Stream. Well, because it's so kind of people to say stuff.
Absolutely.
And
no,
then,
you should
but
respond
then I
to that.
Feel like yeah. I feel like yeah. I.
No. I'm giving you a hard time.
Yeah. I'm bad about social media.
Yeah. So you have a lot of conferences coming up. Do you want to plug some of those?
Oh my gosh, I'm going to be in Paris.
Yep.
Next week.
I got a list if you don't remember.
Oh, go. You go.
You got LeConf.
Uh huh.
And then SpreeConf.
Uh huh.
And then Lone Star. Are you keynoting Lone Star?
I'm keynoting at Lone Star.
What a badass.
And keynotes.
So's Katrina, right?
Yeah. And that's like the world of stories, right? My Lone Star talk's not going to be all that technical. It's going to be, you know, about movable type and the printing press and the business my dad was in and why we should change the world.
Interesting.
But change, right?
Okay.
Like the wave of change is coming. Who's better to shape the next world than us? Like, get on it.
All right. Okay. Fine.
Now, Ben.
God, I got podcasts to do. So,
get your priorities straight.
Yeah. Barucho.
Barucho.
Barcelona,
yeah.
Right?
Barcelona. I'm taking my bike.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
Ruby
oh, awesome.
Nation.
Ruby Nation, okay, yep.
Boston, I'm coming to you guys.
You're doing Wicked Ruby? Are you keynoting Wicked Ruby?
Yeah. I didn't really know that it was a keynote until I...
You're talking to me.
You're not worthy? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. So Lanyard has this section. This is like the conference tracking thing. And it has like a appeared with section.
Uh-huh.
Apparently you and I have appeared at four conferences together.
How cool is that?
I think it's more than that, though, actually.
Yeah. I don't know. You know,
it's
like,
getting up there.
It is. Well, and as it should be. Let me say that. As it should be.
Oh, the great Sandy Metz.
Oh, shush.
Thank you so much for coming by and spending some time and being my Ruby hero. If you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to thoughtbot.com/podcast/51. Today's podcast was recorded and produced by Chad Bytel and edited by Edward Lovell. Thanks for listening.